This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. The Little Mermaid, a remake of the animated classic that's now using live actors, opens this weekend. A remake like this is not without all kinds of risks. The underwater musical sequences have to convince us that they're real. Generations of fans grew up on the 1989 original, and they'll hold it to some very high standards. And ever since the singer and actress Halle Bailey was announced as the new Ariel, there's been a racist backlash from a small but loud chorus on social media, and it feels all too familiar.
While it's got a lot of fans, it is also being attacked by some internet trolls.
Actress Halle Bailey stars as Ariel in Disney's new live-action film, and she looks nothing like the animated Little Mermaid with red hair from the original 1989 classic. Then there are the ugly, racist tweets. The Little Mermaid is white, not black.
Nomi Fry covers pop culture for The New Yorker. And she talked about The Little Mermaid the other day with its director, Rob Marshall. Now, Marshall is not your typical blockbuster director. He began his career as a dancer on Broadway, but he was injured while performing in Cats. So he eventually turned to filmmaking. Since then, Marshall has directed Chicago, which 20 years ago won the Oscar for Best Picture. And he's made ambitious musical films like Into the Woods and Mary Poppins Returns. Here's Rob Marshall talking with Nomi Fry.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank
today.
You, Nomi. Lovely to be here.
Yeah. Seems like such a monumental achievement to even like approach this text and bring it to the screen in the way that you have. And I guess I'll start by asking, what was your relationship with The Little Mermaid before, you know, starting this project? Were you a fan? Did you have any thoughts about it or associations?
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny. In 1989, when the film came out, the animated film, I was doing Broadway. And I remember the whole Broadway community was so excited that this film was coming out because it was really the return of the musical to the screen. Even though it was animated, you know, there was like a proper score.
Life under the sea is better.
People actually singing.
They got going on up there.
This seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world.
I mean, musicals were dead at that point. And so we were so excited. I was so thrilled to see it in the theater. And I remember later, years later, when I did the film Chicago, it felt like, you know, that was sort of pushing the door open for live-action musicals. But in a way, it all started with this Little Mermaid in 1989 because it was really a resurgence of musicals on film.
Down here, all the fish is happy as off through the waves they roll. The fish on the land ain't happy.
You think about all those incredible films like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, all those musicals, original musicals for film that came. And, you know, so I've always had like a connection to it, feeling like it opened the door for me and
that's so
and Chicago.
Interesting to think about. I guess I, you know, not being part of the Broadway community, I've never thought about it in that way. You know, yeah. For me, it was just like a beloved Disney, you know, yeah. animated movie. But it does have that component of being a full-on musical.
It was, and it's on screen. So that was the connection to it. And then, you know, musicals for me, like my first movie that I ever saw was Mary Poppins. You know, but there was Oliver and mm-hmm. My Fair Lady and Sound of Music. And, you know, those movies just shaped me as a young child. Mm-hmm. So I always, you know, I mean, literally, I was always dancing around my house, literally around the living room. Yeah. Literally, one time I was like dancing from couch to chair to couch to chair and landed on the coffee table and broke it.
Oh, God.
So that was not good.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just, if it's in you, it's in you. It's yeah. you know, you somehow you catch the bug and it's part of you, you know?
Was it an immediate yes from you when they
came? No, actually, okay. It wasn't. Okay. I mean, in fact, I think we might have turned it down twice.
Huh. Interesting.
Well, because we thought, well, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And I was also concerned about a remake. I really didn't want to do a frame-by-frame remake of something, mm-hmm. but they were excited about us reimagining it mm-hmm. and looking at it from another angle. And I have to say, for me, I went back to the Hans Christian Andersen tale.
Interesting.
That really helped me because I saw in that a very modern story. It's really mm-hmm. timeless mm-hmm. about a young girl who feels displaced, doesn't feel she belongs, and, you know, really embarks on a journey of self-discovery and also breaking down the barriers and walls between herself, her world, and the other world.
Mm-hmm. Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
And so it was really about prejudice and breaking down those barriers. Mm-hmm. And I just felt, wow, isn't that the world we live in? I mean, for me, the whole time I was doing this movie, it felt really like an antidote to the times we're living in. I mean, the divisive world we live in. So I got excited about the idea of the story and of this movie. And then it was really, like, how do you do it, though?
Exactly.
How do you do
and
it?
And so what was the first, I mean, for me watching it, and I imagine for a lot of lay people watching it who aren't, you know, knowledgeable about exactly how CGI works and how thinking about directing and doing choreography mm-hmm. and singing mm-hmm. Kind of vis-a-vis these new technologies. Mm-hmm. What is the first step when you approach a project like
this? Wow, such a good question. I mean, the first thing we did really was realize that we had to do all of the underwater work in a blue screen stage because you can't, we can't use actual water because people mm-hmm. are singing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking.
Bubble City,
and,
right.
You know, so mm-hmm. it doesn't work like that. So we had to create that environment. But what I realized was, you know, we had to be weightless. People had to be able to fly around and move and swim. I mean, that was the whole idea. So,
right.
And
exactly.
I realized that the way to start would be the sort of the conventional way, which is storyboarding. So you storyboard mm-hmm. the scene, like this is how it should be. That mm-hmm. moved into something called animatics, which is like a live storyboard, like a moving storyboard. And then we moved into something called pre-visualization, which is almost like a little mini movie, little mini animated movie. So you have this all planned out prior, and that took months and months and months and months and months.
And this is all digital, or does it involve any live actors in any capacity?
Not yet. Okay. So it's really just the shape, because what we had to do is we had to communicate what the scene would be to the stunt teams. Mm-hmm. And to our production designer, costume designer, and cinematographer, you know, how we're going to move the camera, how are we going to move the actors around?
Right.
So each, literally, in a scene, as an example, mm-hmm. in a scene, I would say action, eventually, and the actors would be on one sort of rig, and they would do a couple lines, and I'd say cut. Now we'd have to put them on another rig to do that move.
Wow.
So it was like literally shot in pieces. I mean, the goal for me is mm-hmm. that when you see the film, you're unaware of any kind of...
Sure, it's seamless.
Seamless.
Yeah.
And also, mm-hmm. what's there that's real are the people. But
of
what's
course.
Not real is, I mean, the CGI elements is everything around them. So the water, mm-hmm. the vegetation, the fish, all of those things, the mm-hmm. whole world around them, that's completely digital, as is their hair. They all had wig caps. They all had to wear wig caps because the hair is moving. And then
I was going to ask about the hair.
Yes. And then even Ariel's costume is all digital. Now, of course, we built it so that when she's on land, you see it. But underwater, it was just, I guess Javier Bardem as Triton had his armor, so that was truly real.
Right.
And Melissa McCarthy as Ursula, her top, a lot of that was real.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, it was all created. But that's why the movie took 4.5 years, because the post-production on this took 2 years.
Right.
And, you know, I was relentless about the look of it because it had to be – you had to believe. I mean, for me, as soon as I'm in a film and I see some CGI work that I feel is just so artificial, I feel
Can you tell? Is that something that
– I can, unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, I try not to. I just want to sort of live in the world. But when it pulls you out, it's not good.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. More to come.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
The funny thing about musicals for me in general is, you know, a musical, especially a musical film, can go off the rails in 2 seconds because there's that moment when someone starts to sing where it either feels organic and earned and real, or it feels completely embarrassing.
Oh, totally. You know? Yeah, because there's a moment, it's a moment of artifice. It's like,
yes.
Oh, suddenly you're singing? Yes. Like, what's happening?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it only works when it feels like an extension of the scene in some way. Like, they can't, like, words aren't enough so you sing, or a movement's not enough so you dance. And it should feel seamless and organic. And that's always been the goal.
Yeah.
And I'm always aware of that when I'm working on a movie, especially because it's such a real genre. You know, you're sitting in the movie. It's different in a theater. You're in a theater and it feels artificial already. So when someone sings, it doesn't feel it's too strange. But movies are so realistic that you have to be so careful about how that first moment happens in the, you know, when the first moment of singing happens. I mean, in our film, Ariel sings Part of Your World. That's the first musical number in the movie. It's 15 minutes in.
It's 15, right. It takes a while because I was watching and I was like, okay, I know this movie is supposed to be a musical, but I was like, she's singing. It's been a while since the beginning.
Yes,
it does take a little bit.
It does. Well, you know, every musical has their own sort of shape. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the shape of that because that song is literally like our version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an I Want song. And it's what begins the motor of the whole piece.
Mm-hmm.
What's her goal? What does she want?
Mm-hmm.
When people talk about I Want songs, they always reference Part of Your World or Somewhere Over the Rainbow. You know, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wanted to create at the beginning, I wanted to create a real world above on the ship. I wanted to make sure that you were inside the story and believed it before we're sort of asking people to hear someone sing. And it's what I love about Part of Your World is that it's just her thoughts. It's an extension of what she's feeling, and she's speaking to Flounder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't understand why, you know, those people up there, you know, why we should be afraid of them.
Yeah.
If you know, because she's collecting all these beautiful things, you mm-hmm. know, they make all these beautiful things. I don't believe they can be that bad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I feel like, wow, I mean, that she has that moment, she can actually sing it and it can come from her almost like an internal monologue coming out of her, you know.
Yeah.
And the goal is that by the time she sings, you're ready for that. You know, you feel right. ready, and now you're
that
ready,
makes sense.
And you can embrace
mm-hmm.
Musical.
Mm-hmm.
Bet you on land, they understand. Bet they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of forming, ready to stand. Questions and get some answers. What's a fire and why does it, what's the word, burn? When did my turn? Wouldn't I love to explore the shore above?
That obviously also touches on all of these questions of kind of cultural, you know, the complaints that because, you know, Halle Bailey is a woman of color,
yes.
and, you know, this is a very diverse version of the story, adaptation of the story. There was kind of backlash that this is like, oh, it's too woke, you know, like they're doing, Disney is going woke, you know,
yeah,
all of that talk.
Yes.
Well,
it's ironic. I'll tell you why. There was zero agenda.
Interesting. Okay.
So when we went to cast the role of Ariel,
mm-hmm.
It was, let's find the best person for the role,
mm-hmm.
period. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
We saw everybody. We saw every ethnicity. We just looked for the best person.
Mm-hmm.
And Halle came in. She sang Part of Your World. It was so moving, so touching, so deep. And then she read for us, and she was 18 when she came in for us.
Wow, that's
she's 23 now, so
young.
That's the
right.
That's
how
the
long
length,
it took.
Right?
Yeah,
and she was otherworldly. And when people see the film, they'll see she's Ariel. I never thought once about skin color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will say it was my intention to make the sisters the daughters of the seven seas, because I really wanted to lean into the mythology of Triton and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, mm-hmm. Here we are. We have seven of these, you know, mm-hmm. mermaids. So let's make them the daughters of the seven seas. So that was fun. But it was never sort of like, let's do a woke version of Little Mermaid.
Sure.
It was, let's just do the best version of Little Mermaid. And I hope, you know, to me, this whole controversy in a way feels archaic. I mean, you know, like from another century, you know.
Totally.
I mean, I did Cinderella
mm-hmm.
as a choreographer in 1997 that,
mm-hmm.
with Brandy playing Cinderella.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Of
remember
course.
That with
yeah.
Whoopi and
yeah.
this fabulous cast and Whitney Houston?
Yeah.
And it was a colorblind casting, and it
mm-hmm.
was sort of, you know, I don't know, new at that time.
Yeah.
But that was 1997.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much, Rob.
No,
thank
this
you.
Has been a pleasure.
This has been so nice.
Rob Marshall is the director of Disney's new Little Mermaid, and he spoke with Nomi Fry, a staff writer at The New Yorker.
Look at the sun and the sky and the sand and the sea behind me. Look at me suddenly.
I'm David Remnick, and that's our program for today. I hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Meryl Garbes of Toon Yards, with additional music by Louis Mitchell. This episode was produced